Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me today for this SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. Today we'll be covering three interesting topics that have come up in the news in the last few days. I'll share with you those stories on fewer international students and what that means for U.S. colleges. A new piece in the Pi News, an excerpt from their quarterly journal, on Trump's America, is it a strikeout or a home run regarding international education? And then a third article, a non-industry article on keeping the faith with international students. Are we doing a job on that with all the changes that have been happening? So that's what we'll cover today. For those that are new to this format in the midweek roundup for SMIE Consulting, we take the time each week to cover two or three major news stories that have popped onto the radar in the last few days that are impacting our industries or give us a different perspective on what's happening in our industry. And today I'll be covering those three. I'll be sharing the links to those articles in the comments section on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. So you're welcome to follow along there on SMIE Consulting's Facebook page or join in the conversation as we go. So thanks for joining me today. What I'd like to start with is a story out of The Hill, which is actually an online or a publication related to political events out of Washington, D.C. on The Hill. So we'll be sharing that in terms of what that means. That article specifically relates to the impact of what fewer international students could become a problem for U.S. universities. And the writer takes the perspective for this article specifically as to impacts on declining international enrollments on state universities, public universities in the U.S. The research is a little bit off in terms of some of the claims the author is making. That international enrollments have declined over the past few years, and it's only in the last 2 years that that's happened. So, and it was very modest in the first year, and it really wasn't a decline, it was a decline in the growth. And then we've certainly seen the results as it relates to not only what we'll have seen the results in last year's Open Doors, which addressed the new international student enrollment growth decline, but more recently, and I think moving forward, the more accurate representation of where we are with international student numbers in the United States, painting the full picture, is found in the SEVIS by the numbers reports that comes out of DHS on an almost quarterly basis now. So, but this article in particular focuses on research the author had done in 2016 with University of Michigan, the Urban Institute, and University of Virginia that looked at specifically public universities and how they were impacted are being impacted by the current enrollment drops. The initial research was done that surveyed some of the reasons for the incredible growth of international students that occurred at public universities. And the author makes some interesting comparisons between in Michigan, Michigan State really back in 2005-2006 really felt that they were facing significant budget cuts. That as a land-grant institution, they were not perhaps with the large endowments that their neighbors up the road in Ann Arbor had in terms of as a large public flagship institution. That played a role in Michigan State developing a very robust international recruitment strategy, and in fact opening offices in China as a result to help manage the flow of the increase in Chinese students that were soon coming to their campus. And they did that as a result of incredible budget cuts from state government resources. Certainly not alone in Michigan. It's happened nationwide where you've seen state institutions really suffer, particularly the non-flagships that don't have the large endowments to that really can't, don't have a flexibility and resources to rely on other internal monies to help sustain what they're doing as an institution. So at Michigan State, they went all in on China. They had over 3,000 to 6,000 international students in the course of a very short amount of time. So, and that's that has been a driving cause of their growth as an institution. Obviously, other things have come to the fore in the last couple of years that are impacting them in other ways. But certainly, the drop off in international students is certainly being felt on college campuses this fall, in particular. Not just from China, where there have been drops and anticipated there at Michigan State and other flagship institutions and land grant institutions on the public side. There are regional publics. I worked at one in Indiana for a number of years, and that was at a time, and it's about the same time Michigan State was ramping up, where our budgets were being cut significantly down to less than 20% of students' tuition was actually being, in-state tuition was actually being funded, or operating expenses, I should say, was actually being funded by state sources. So regional publics, in the article, the Hill article, they refer to the kind of the triumvirate of Michigan, University of Michigan as a flagship, really being able to weather the storm budgetarily. Michigan State relying on this international students, particularly from China, to fuel their growth and or maintenance, at least. And then they also threw in Eastern Michigan into the mix, which was a little bit odd, and saying to something to the effect that Eastern Michigan was certainly struggling. They were suffering from the inability to attract international students. Meant sharper tuition increases there and cuts to expenditures. But the reality is, at Michigan State, they saw an opportunity in the last couple of years, certainly with their participation, very active participation. You are welcome here. There's been a lot of growth there. They're an institution that is all in on international and values what those students bring to the college campus and will make the necessary investments as they would with any other demographic that they highly sought after. So I think that the article poses, an interesting contribution to the conversation on declines. He does make some interesting comments about, which, and certainly ones that I've said many times, that the declines that are coming are being experienced now cannot all be attributed to what happened with the election results in 2016. Were things with the Saudi Arabian government scholarship cutbacks, with the Brazilian scientific mobility program running its course, continued demographic declines in key markets in Japan and Korea, which I've talked about previously. Those were all predating the election and were already impacting institutions, particularly institutions that frankly didn't really spend a lot of time broadening the base, their base of where they were recruiting students. That were overly reliant on India and China, perhaps, or just India, or just China, for their international students to bolster their revenues. So I think what we're seeing now, the author alludes to it, is a kind of a perfect storm of events that are impacting institutions. Certainly, they're going to impact institutions that are not as prepared to weather the storm, who do not have and already provide a very high level of service to the international students they do have. Because ultimately, those students that are on campus now are the ones that demand and need to be taken care of the best. Because if you're not taking care of the ones you have, how do you expect to recruit new ones to the same and expect the same results? So that's something that we really want to focus on moving forward, I think, and should be focusing on as institutions, is the level of service we're providing to our existing students and using that as the foundation for moving forward to grow our international populations. So that's a little bit of a take on that first article from The Hill. The second one is comes from the Pi News, one of my favorite places to go for information, up-to-date information. This came out last week, Thursday, Friday. But it's an excerpt from their quarterly journal. But it talks about a view. It's called A View from Trump's America, Strikeout or Home Run. And what's interesting about this article is it really attempts to paint, it's kind of a, either we're going to strike out or it's going to be a home run, the way we respond as a nation to some of the political conversations that have gone on, and as institutions, how we respond So I think it's a real challenge, frankly, perhaps an oversimplification with this article. But in terms of the two university folks that they really spent time with are at NYU, Sharif Barshoom, whom I've known for years, Director of International there, and Jessica Sandberg at Temple, who we all know from Your Welcome Here. But those two institutions, particularly NYU, they, and Sharif mentions this in his comments in the article, are kind of insulated from a lot of the impact and the political negativity that has surrounded a lot of the discussions about immigration related to international students coming to the United States. They're still booming. Temple, Jessica's example there with You Are Welcome Here, that's done a lot to sustain them and presenting their institution as one that truly cares and welcomes international students. I think that's done a lot to support them. But the key thing, I think, when you look at these two examples, they're both East Coast schools. They're both in metropolitan areas that are already hubs for international students and will continue to be so. Where the challenges are being faced more starkly are, frankly, in the Midwest and the South, where if they're not in the major metropolitan areas, you do see, and they perhaps have not, they certainly wouldn't necessarily have the name recognition as other institutions nationwide, don't have the national rankings perhaps, are in flyover land, and I'm in flyover land in Ohio, and I know what that is, and know the stigma attached to it. But for institutions that are also less prepared internationally for the students that they do have on campus and make decisions to go all in, they're the ones really suffering now. And even institutions that do have it together internationally are doing everything that they can, yet are still struggling. And that's the real challenge moving forward, is how do those institutions maintain what they have without dropping too terribly much, and how do other institutions really maintain their services, and if not increase what they're doing internationally, doubling down and on international students and the services they're providing to make sure that future students see that their institutions as a true home for them. So the article itself does have a couple of interesting pieces. They mention how intensive English programs have certainly suffered in the last year, related to drop-offs, particularly from the Saudi scholarship cutbacks, but also other former sources of the Brazilian students on scientific mobility scholarships. Those had been sustained the IEP industry for 2-3 years running, and now are no longer there. Those taps have almost dried up completely. So for those IEPs, intensive English programs, they're suffering. Interesting area that does not seem to be, and in fact maybe booming, is the homestay programs. And the article pitches it as such that it's really, these homestay programs are really attracting, are being seen by international admissions offices, international students. These homestay options are seen as making an institution much more attractive. So for students at perhaps maybe the graduate level or younger students that maybe don't want to live on campus, they want to have an option to live with a family. That seems to be something that's more attractive for parents. They also, with the article, address the gun safety issue and the perceptions of that as campuses being unsafe. But the institutions that are interviewed for the article certainly make reference to their efforts to improve what they're doing on the safety front on their campuses. So I think that's something that certainly the homestay piece was something I had not seen previously, and I'm encouraged to see that part of international ed is growing, that there are institutions that are and will continue to thrive. So it's encouraging to see that and as opposed to the broad brush that's painted by a lot in the international ed press that kind of condemns all institutions to the fate of, well, there go our international students, so what are you going to do now? And really kind of throw up their hands and don't really propose any solutions. So there are those institutions that are trying, and I think that they need to be held up as positive examples, those that are taking on the homestay programs to make their offerings and their environment more encouraging to international students and their parents. I think it's positive directions there. So if housing on campus is a problem for international students, whether you don't have the year-round housing that students need, or you aren't able to provide kitchen accommodations for students that maybe aren't finding their dietary needs met by the food services folks, that for graduate students that might want apartments that have cooking facilities but don't, if there's a lack of that in your area, maybe these homestays are an option for you. So it's you got to be creative now, and it's forcing all institutions to really look hard about what they're doing to and for international students. So I really encourage all my colleagues who are struggling in those areas to really start thinking outside the box and look at your community for resources that can help sustain you and sustain what you're doing in a more holistic manner than perhaps you have been able to in recent months and years. Now, a final article that I'd spend time talking about with today is a very different perspective. It's actually from a tutor and a teacher in Dallas County Community Colleges in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, in Dallas, Irving, and Plano, Texas, in the Metroplex there. It's from the perspective, are we keeping faith with international students? And the author is a teacher, as I mentioned, a tutor, but also a former pastor, maybe still a pastor in the Dallas metropolitan area. But I think what's the point of this article and why I bring it up today is it addresses things from a different perspective. Someone who's in education, but not necessarily has their core of what they do in international ed. And the author kind of, definitely takes the perspective that the political climate and the impact that he sees on current students, he's projecting also to prospective students. Because he's seeing students that many of them, the students that he sees, that he tutors, they're performing well, and certainly will finish their studies well, but they're not risking the trip home because of concerns they're not going to be allowed to re-enter. Even though the political the way the law is written is that unless there's something that's significantly changed, as long as all your documents are in order, that your travel your I-20 has been signed for travel, that's and your visa is still valid for re-entry, then there should not be an issue. If everything else has been equal, the student has been in status, there's no academic issues, no personal issues, there should not be anything, unless it's been reported in CVIS, that should prevent that student from coming back in. So that's something that I think the perception is there, though the law is written so that there it's fairly clear that if there's no issues, then that you're free to travel and come back. But it's really putting off it's putting off current students who might not want to risk not being able to get back in. So for others, it's also thinking as prospective students that they might not even want to apply to the United States anymore because of what's happened. And hearing this kind of an appeal for common sense. And a reality check, I think, for institutions is important when it's coming not from directly from our sector. He's an educator, but not an international ed person, though he does tutor international students. And I think it's something that he calls it the policies that have been that are under review and are considered being changed. He's looking at these international students that have come here already, that it's already a great sacrifice for them to come from their home countries to the United States, great financial sacrifice to them and their families, and they can remain remain here if they're doing well. But this rite of passage for them, where they were initially welcomed here, it can potentially be leaving a bad taste in their mouth with everything that's going on. With what he calls an ignoble act of bad faith, and I really like that language, ignoble act of bad faith, describing what's happening in the U.S. in terms of the tenor of conversations in government in particular. So I do like this author has also references the fact that long been a part of the Education USA lexicon in terms of how we speak about international education's value. is that as a public diplomacy tool, is how so many of the leadership of leaders of the world, of world leaders, folks who are educated here, who came from abroad, who have gone on to become innovators in the U.S., to be entrepreneurs, to be business leaders. Elon Musk is certainly one of them. Jack Ma in China from Alibaba. These are former international students. World leaders are who have been educated here. They take with them their experience, their positive experience, hopefully, to back to their countries, and hopefully that. And in the past, that's reflected well on us as a country, and that is in danger of being lost. So this is something I think is really a moral concern for all of us who are in international ed, who feel that, and certainly have been feeling that for the last few months, and if not a couple of years now. And that's what we're looking at. And this article certainly addresses a little bit of it. Is the impact on this as a, on us as a country, and how this is can really be turning prospective students off. And I think that's when that kind of language, when I hear that kind of language from a non-international educator, it really starts to make me stand up and take notice. So I think what all three of these articles really touch on is something that's been a common theme in international ed press for the last couple of years, is what the effect of political rhetoric on what's happening in the world. There's a couple of things that I'll touch on next week on a couple of other recent articles that also address the issue of the value of U.S. higher education for international audiences. And that's something I think we say we know how to talk about as institutions to prospective students and their families, but that's worth another conversation, is how are we articulating our value as institutions to prospective students? Not just that we're welcoming, not just that we have financial aid to help some of them attend in terms of merit scholarships or what have you, that our campuses have all these bells and whistles that are attractive for them, ones that they never knew even existed at their own institutions back home. But it is a point of how and what we communicate as valuable about the U.S. higher education system, about the quality. We know the quality is there, but what does that really mean for prospective students? The work opportunities has certainly been something that has been of attraction for international students for years, particularly for STEM field studies. We've talked about that last week. But certainly in an overall perspective for prospective students and their families, what does the value of our institutions, of your specific institution, what do those really mean? How do we articulate that to prospective students? And I want to touch on certainly one of the great thought leaders in our business, Rahul Chuadaha, touch on an article he wrote last week, next time, on that on the value of international education. So. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining me. And if you didn't catch the live episode, hopefully you can watch it on SMI Consulting on our Facebook page. So thanks very much, and have a great week, everybody.